Earlier this week, when we were talking about Eretz Yisrael, I had mentioned that Rav Shechter has a beautiful piece in the Sefer Bikvei Hatzon on his take on Zionism, I guess. It's called Begidrei Medinas Yisrael Milchamoseha. So at the time, someone said, maybe we could spend our Thursday shiur going through that piece. But the Thursday shiur is an introduction shiur. So I figured that maybe we'll start with the introduction to Bikvei Hatzon and then go through that piece as much as we can. We're not going to be able to finish the whole thing. Very large, and I think you'll see a lot of examples of what he says in the introduction about his style of learning and the value of the way learning should be, you see reflections of that in this this particular piece of Torah. Normally, when we do an introduction shiur, I try to not only go through the introduction but show you a couple of pieces of Torah to give you a little bit of a flavor, a little bit of a taste of that Talmud Chacham's writings and his Chidushei Torah. So with Rav Shechter, I sort of do that the rest of the year. I'll give you a little bit of a taste every other day of Shir. So this day of Shir, I think we could focus on one particular piece of Torah. But just in terms of the introduction to Sefer Bikvei Hatzon, Rav Shechter wrote three svarim in addition to the Nefesh HaRav and Mipnine HaRav and Divrei HaRav, which are Hanhagos of Rav Soloveitchik. He wrote three svarim of his own Chidushei Torah, in addition to many other svarim that were written based off of his notes, but the three svarim that he wrote of his own, Chidushei Torah, Eretz HaTzvi, starts with an Aleph, Bi'ikvei Hatzon, starts with a Beis, and Ginas Ego, starts with a Gimel. He's going in alphabetical order, and Bi'ikvei Hatzon is therefore his second Sefer. It was published about 15 years ago. So he starts over the Medrash. The Medrash Rabbah tells us that Avram was Birechis Yitzchak, as it says, Ve'yitein Avram is Kolash HaLol Yitzchak, Ma Nasalno, what did Avram give to Yitzchak? Bracha Nasalno. And then it says, Amad Yitzchak Levarechis Yaakov. So Yitzchak said, I gotta bless Yaakov. So he figured, what should I bless Yaakov with? So he says, "Mi makom shepasak Abba misham ani maschil." Where Dad left off, that's where I'm going to pick up. Abba hivsik biyitain. The last statement of Avram's bracha to Yitzchak included a lashon of yitain. So afani maschil biyitain. So I'm going to pick up with that word. Shneimer viyitain l'cha elokim. What did Yitzchak finish his bracha with? With kriya. Shneimer vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov vayvarechel so. So Yaakov, when he had to bless the Shvatim, figured, how am I going to start the bracha? Bikriya! Vayikra Yaakov Elbanav! You have a lashon of Vayikra in the beginning of Yaakov's bracha. How does he finish off his bracha, Yaakov, to his children? With the word Zos. The Zos asher dibor lahem aviyem. So when Moshe Rabbeinu has to bless Klal Yisrael, how does he start off? He says, well, let's see. Mizikenim esponan. Let me go back to the last bracha. What did Yaakov finish off his bracha with? And I'll start with that. V'zos habracha. So Moshe has to bless Klal Yisrael. Also starts with Zos. David picks up from where Moshe left off. Ashreya ish. That David starts off with. Because again, Moshe left off with Ashrecha Yisrael. Mi kamocha. So Ashrei Ashrei. So you see a theme over here. What's the Medrash telling us? That no two Avos, or no two Gedolim in our history, gave us the exact same brachos. But they all picked off from where they all picked up from where the previous one left off. And what the lesson is that it's teaching us is that you're not always supposed to repeat exactly as your Rebbe did, or exactly as your parents did, or exactly as whoever the Balei HaMesorah are that you've received your Mesorah from. You're not always supposed to do exactly what they did, but you should always follow in their path. They should have always set a direction for you, and you should be going along that direction. And for example, he gives three examples. Yitzchak followed his father in every which way that he could. He redug the same holes that Avram Avinu dug. But Hashem told him, when Yitzchak was thinking, oh, there's a famine, I got to go to Mitzrayim. So Hashem said, no, you don't go to Mitzrayim. What do you mean? Why can't I go to Mitzrayim? That's what Avram did. His Havamina was very good. My father did it, so why shouldn't I do the same thing? So what's the answer? No, your father was different. You're an Ola Tamima. You have to live your entire life in Eretz Yisrael. The circumstances for you are different. If your father would have been an Ola Tamima, he wouldn't have gone to Mitzrayim either. You don't always do exactly the same thing. What was right for him is not necessarily right for you. Another example, Yoshua, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Dalid, made a big mistake by deciding that anyone who takes from the spoils of Yericho is going to be cursed, by making a cherim from taking from the spoils of Yericho. Because the milchama against Yericho happened on Shabbos, so Yoshua decided that everything should be kadosh, that nothing should go to anybody, no one should be able to take any of the spoils. And of course, Achan did take from the spoils of Yericho, and that led to the loss of the Battle of Ai, of the first Battle of Ai. And the Gemara Sanhedrin says it was Yeshua's fault. He shouldn't have made such a rule. Marsha points out, wait a second, in many battles, Moshe Rabbeinu made such a rule. Moshe Rabbeinu said in some of the battles that they weren't allowed to take from the spoils of wherever they had defeated. So why was Yeshua wrong for making such a rule? So says Marsha, because in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, they didn't have such a concept yet called Kol Yisrael Arevim Zalazeh, that all of Klal Yisrael is responsible for each other. In Yeshua's times, that had already happened. That rule had already kicked in. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yeshua that Klal Yisrael sinned. Why? Because Achan, one man, did an Avera. Klal Yisrael sinned when one man does an Avera. How's it Klal Yisrael? Because all of Klal Yisrael is responsible for each other. So you have to be a little lighter on the expectations. If you're going to set the bar very high, and you know that one person steps out of line, all of Klal Yisrael is responsible, you're setting yourself up for failure. So it was right for Moshe Rabbeinu, because someone doesn't have air, it's his problem. But in Yeshua's time, it no longer made sense to do that. That's why the Medrash says, Chayev Adam Lomar, Masa Yagiu Ma'asai L'Masai Avosai. When will my own actions reach Yagiu L'Masai Avosai? So everyone asks on the Medrash, what do you mean? The Medrash says, you're supposed to say, when am I going to be like Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? When will my Masim be Magia to Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? So everyone asks, what do you mean? Never. You will never be Avram Yitzchak. Don't mean to burst anyone's bubble. You're all great people. You're going to be wonderful B'nai Torah. You are wonderful B'nai Torah. You'll be even more wonderful B'nai Torah. You're not going to be Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. It's no insult to tell you. I remember before I left Eretz Yisrael, I was talking to Rav Silver about career paths that I should go on. Should I go into Chinuch? Should I go? So he said, listen, you're never going to be Rav Schechter. I wasn't insulted. I was pretty sure I wasn't going to be Rav Schechter. Of course, he followed it up by saying, "But who knows? Maybe you could be a Talmud Chacham. Maybe still hasn't happened. But you never know. It could still happen. Not going to be Rav Schechter. It's not an insult. It's not such a terrible insult. You're not going to be Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. So what do you mean? You're supposed to say, when am I going to be Magia to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov? So says Rav Schechter. No, you're supposed to say, it's not Magia as in reach. It's as in Naga, as in touch. That I want my actions to touch on the actions of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. I want them to be the logical connection to the actions of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. I want people to see in my actions that this is the continuation of what Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov did. That's Masa Yagia. Not that it should be exactly the same. We can't do like they did. We're never going to be like them. Third example, the Gemara Chulin Daf Kuf Hei, very famous Gemara, tells us Mar Ukva used to lament that he is kechala bar chamra. He is like vinegar, the son of wine, legabe avua, in comparison to his father. Why? Because his father, when he ate a fleishig meal, wouldn't have a milchig meal, wouldn't eat ice cream for 24 hours. He probably never ate ice cream. He wouldn't drink milk for 24 hours. But he says, me, I only go misu'uda l'su'uda. I only don't eat milk for another, till the next meal. So everyone asks, the Bali Musar all asks, Rav Sturmbach has this in the Sefer on Chumash, and Rav Schechter writes in the introduction that all the Bali Musar ask, instead of lamenting, oh, why can't I be more like my dad, why don't you just do what he did? Oh, it's too bad. He waited 24 hours. Too bad that I don't. I'm so terrible. Woe unto me. I have an idea, just wait 24 hours, then you'll be like him, and you won't have to be so sad about how you're not like him. So Rav Schechter points out, and all the Bali Musar point out, no. When you take upon yourself a chumrah, you have to be someone who's a bar hachi. You have to be someone who's ready for such a chumrah. So a chumrah that was right for him is not necessarily right for you. Mar Ukva had the self-recognition to know that the chumrah that was right for his father was not necessarily right for himself. And that's what he was saying. He was saying, it's sad that I'm not a Bal Madrega like he was. I'm just not as good as him. I can't take upon myself those chumras. It would be totally inappropriate for me to take upon myself those chumras. I always give the example, Rabbi Balzam likes to say that, you know, it's known the Chavetz Chaim kept a bag packed for Mashiach. So one of the parents in Yeshiva, a parent teacher conferences, once told Rabbi Balzam in a conference, he said, you should know, I have a bag packed. And he said, the guy sounds like an idiot. You're not the Chavetz Chaim. Chavetz Chaim can have a backpack. Who are you? You can have a backpack that Mashiach's going to come and say it's not an appropriate chumrah for everybody. No offense if it was anyone here's parent. I don't know. There are several reasons why we can't just do exactly what our Rebbeim did and exactly what our forefathers did. Number one is Yiridas Hadoros, as in Marukva's case, where he just wasn't quite as good as his father, so it doesn't always make sense to do the same thing. Another example, another reason is changed circumstances. Like in the case of Yitzchak, Yitzchak was an Ola Tamima, so it was a different circumstance. Yoshua had to worry about Arvus, a different circumstance. So different circumstances sometimes call for different behaviors. But there's a third reason, and that is the most fundamental of all the reasons. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created each of us B'Tzelem Elokim. We are supposed to be like Hashem in a certain way. We're supposed to be V'alachta B'drachav. And the number one midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that He is a Yachid U'miyuchad. He is an individual. There is nothing else like Him. Part of the mitzvah of V'alachta B'drachav is that we each need to be individuals. We're not supposed to be exactly like somebody else. If a person walks around all day trying to dress up like his Rebbe and look like his Rebbe, and you know, my beard grows in a certain way, so a person's going to shave out exactly over here that his beard should look exactly like the Rebbe's beard. That's ridiculous. You're not supposed to be somebody else. You're supposed to be you. You're supposed to be, every person has to be an individual. And that's another reason why we can't always necessarily do exactly what our Rebbeim did. We have to adjust. And this applies not only in Hashkafa, it applies in Halacha as well. It's in Psak Halacha. Sometimes circumstances change and the whole way you view a Halacha is going to change. A lot of times a Shaila sounds the same and it's not exactly the same Shaila. A little detail changes the whole tenor of the Shaila, changes the whole direction that the Shaila is going to take. And that's why, according to the Medrash, Yehuda had to be sent to Mitzrayim to set up a yeshiva. He goes to Goshen to set up a yeshiva. Well, what does he need to go set up a yeshiva Mitzrayim for? They're going to come. When they come, there'll be a yeshiva. No, he needed to set up a yeshiva because they're going to be in a new place. They needed to establish a yeshiva within that makom. Within that place, there has to be a new style of Torah. It has to be adjusted for that location, for the realities of living in Mitzrayim. So Shaftar writes that he named this Sefer B'ikve Atzon, based on the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which, based on Rashi's commentary to the pasuk, essentially means that if you're lost and you're lacking direction and you're not sure where to go, you're not sure what direction to take in any issue, Tzi'ilucha bi'ikve atzon, you should follow the those who came before you, just like a sheep follows the sheep in front of him. Follow those who came before you. Don't become those who came before you, but follow in their general path. That we have a Balia Masora that we are responsible for following. And Rav Shechter says, I try to do this, he says, as best as I can, in terms of following Mori Varabi, Rav Soloveitchik, Zechut Tzadik Levracha, that he tries to, he's not Rav Soloveitchik, he doesn't try to be like Rav Soloveitchik, he doesn't say shir like Rav Soloveitchik, but he tries to make sure that his general derech in learning, his general derech hachayim, is one that's patterned after, that's the natural extension of what he was able to pick up from his own Rebbe. And he points out a beautiful Ha'ara, Pirkei Avos, a beautiful Vart in Pirkei Avos. It says, if you look at the series of Mishnayos in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos that discuss the groups of four, it says, well, there are four midos in, how does it go? There are four midos in people who are in dalin midos ba'adam, whenever it lists four midos in adam, four midos in balei chesed. Some people say shali shalcha v'shalcha shalcha. Some say shali shali v'shalcha shali. So in all those examples, in all those mishnayos, they give us another. We have four midos b'deos. Kashalichos noach lirtzos, kashalichos kashalirtzos. Right, all those different midos. We have another mishnah that talks about midos b'talmidim, how talmidim act. Midos b'nosnei tzedaka. In all those examples, there are always four, and in all those fours, the third one is always the best one. If you look down the list, the third one is always the best one. Shaliv shalchav shalcha shalcha is the third one. That's a chassid. That's the best one. Kashalichos noach lirtzos, he's very difficult to get angry, easy to appease when he does get angry. Chassid, that's the third on the list of the possibilities. Maher lishma v'kashal abeid, chacham. Someone who's quick to hear something, quick to learn something, and doesn't lose it easily, that's a chacham. That's the third one on the list. Harotzalite v'yitnu acherim, someone whose attitude is, I want to give, and I also want others to give tzedakah. I don't want to be the only one with my name and lights on the building. I want everyone to give tzedakah. So that's a chassid. That's great. That's fantastic. That's the third one on the list. Holchei beis hamedrash, someone who's not only holeich, but he's osei. He goes and he learns. He doesn't just go. He doesn't just learn. He goes and he learns. Fantastic. That's the best. It's the third one on the list. And then the Mishnah says, there are dalin midos with yoshvei lifnei chachamim. There are four different types of people that sit in front of chachamim. And the third one on the list is that motzi es hayayin v'kolet es hashemarim. He loses all the wine. The wine all gets is all gone, but he still hangs on to the sediment, to the junk that's left over from the grapes. So you would think that's the worst midah. The wine is the good thing. Why would you want to lose the wine and hang on to the sediment? Why is that? And yet that's the third one on the list. It's the only one that doesn't fit the rest of the pattern. Every other mishnah, the third one is always the best. So why is this one the best? So says Rav Shechter, motzi es hayayin doesn't mean he's ma'abed es hayayin. It's talking about someone who is yoshev lefnei chachamim, who's now trying to give over Torah to his talmidim. Motzi es hayayin means he takes the finest Torah that he learned from his Rebbe, and he's motzi that he gives that to his talmidim. He keeps the shemarim, the havaminas that were rejected, and all of the other things that weren't necessarily the best and the finest Torah of his Rebbe, and that he doesn't share, he narrows it down, and he gives over the best of the Torah that he learned, he gives over to the next generation. He keeps for himself, without giving over, all of the Havaminas. So says Rav Shechter, well, why does he keep that for himself? Shouldn't he just chuck that in the garbage? Why would you want to keep that at all? So he says, this is Begeder, Va'alo lo yibol. The Gemara says that, the Gemara in Sukkah, even when Talmidei Chacham say Sicha Schulin, Rav Chaim Blashon explains, Talmidei Chacham don't speak Sicha Schulin. It means even when a Talmud Chacham says something that's only a Havamina, and it turns out that he's wrong, a Havamina and a Shir, that also you have to hold on to. That also is meaningful. That also is going to be valuable. Why is that valuable? It's valuable because it shows you which questions to ask, which questions not to ask. It shows you which topics to dwell on in learning, which topics not to dwell on in learning. You could sit in Rav Soloveitchik's shiur for 4 hours, and then the next day he'll come and he'll say, everything I said yesterday was wrong. He was known to do this. So do you think, wow, what a colossal waste of 4 hours yesterday must have been. Everything he said was wrong. But the answer is no. You may not say over that shiur, yesterday's shiur, to your Talmidim, because it's the shiur that he had proven to be incorrect. But you gain so much from that, because you learned about which questions to ask. You learned about a mahalich to take, what to dwell on, a direction to take in the sugya. I often tell of a story, Shachter likes to say that when he was in Rabbi Gorelick's year, when he was in the 11th grade, and they pushed him to Rav Soloveitchik's year, which was the top year in YU at the time, because the high school shiurim couldn't contain his brain, I guess. So they put him in Rabbi Soloveitchik's shiur. Rabbi Soloveitchik said shiur only 3 days a week. Rabbi Gorelick said shiur the other 2 days. Rabbi Gorelick said shiur 5 days a week. But they thought it wasn't healthy for an 11th grader to only be in shiur 3 days a week. That who knows what he's going to be doing the other 2 days. So they sent him to Rabbi Gorelick's shiur the other 2 days. And he said that one time he was in Rabbi Gorelick's shiur and they got up to a Rashi. And Rabbi Gorelick used to always challenge him. He would say, "No, Herschel, what did Rabbi Soloveitchik say about this Rashi?" And he said, Rav Soloveitchik didn't talk about this Rashi. And Rabbi Gorelick said, just like you learn from Gedolim what to talk about, you also learn from Gedolim what not to talk about. We're not going to learn this Rashi either. And he just moved on. You learn what to focus on, what not to focus on, even if you're not getting all the maskanas. You learn a general direction of learning. And Rav Shechter said, that's basically the point of this sefer. Here he is setting up a sefer. First one was all lamdas. This is a lot of halacha lemaisa types of topics in Be'ikve Atzon. And he says, the theme is, there's not a piece in this sefer that doesn't have Torah from his Rebbe, from Rav Soloveitchik, but none of it is Rav Soloveitchik's Torah per se. It's all Rav Shechter's Torah, you know, based on the Tzi'ilcha Be'ikve Atzon, following in the path of his own Rebbe. So that's the basic introduction, and I think this piece that we're going to do today, with the remaining time that we have, is an excellent example of that. I photocopied the entire piece for you in the packets. Obviously we're not going to read it inside, but this piece is an excellent example of that. Rav Soloveitchik would never have spoken with this kind of terminology about Zionism. Rav Soloveitchik's Zionism was a very different kind of Zionism than Rav Shechter's Zionism, in the sense that Rav Soloveitchik was known, he never spoke about Zionism in terms of Geula. He always spoke about it in terms of the benefit of having a state of Israel, and how wonderful it is to have a state of Israel. Rav Shechter is very much a Geula Zionist. He speaks about Eretz Yisrael and Medinas Yisrael in terms of Aschalta de Geula, in terms of Reishis Tzmichas Geula Seinu. And I want to go through how he develops that idea. So essentially, you could break down Siman Lamed Beis in Be'ikvei Atzon to six parts. First, he discusses land for peace, and whether Pikuach Nefesh demands that we give up land in order to achieve peace, assuming that we actually have partners in peace, that if we give them land, we actually will have peace. So if we think it will save a couple of Jewish lives, or more than a couple of Jewish lives, is it worth giving up land in Eretz Yisrael in order to achieve peace? That's Nekuda number one he discusses. Then he talks about how when you're dealing with a war, there's a mitzvah to fight a war, but there's only a mitzvah to fight a winnable war. If you're about to fight a war that you know you're going to lose, that's not a mitzvah. That loses the status of milchemes mitzvah. It's only a war that's worth fighting if it's a winnable war. Third thing he discusses is aschalta degula, and that's really the bulk of the piece, where he discusses the concept of Medinas Yisrael being aschalta degula. Then fourth, he goes on to discuss, can a bad government, can a government of Rishayim that was established by Rishayim, and that was established by people who were very, very far from Shmiras Torah mitzvos, can that actually be the aschalta degula? Then he discusses, does the Geula, you know, if this doesn't feel like Geula, Rabbi J.J. Schachter likes to say that, you know, before the Hakamas HaMedina, everyone always assumed Geula was going to be, you know, get on your eagle and give it a whip and it's going to fly you straight to Eretz Yisrael and there you go. And the Beis HaMikdash comes down, Rabbi Levin gave Shirman this way, the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down from heaven, just knock out the dome and boom, there's the Beis, and everything's good and that's it, it's going to happen. That's the way we always imagined Geula. And then came Medinas Yisrael and it's Geula, but it's not Geula. And we're not like really sure what it is because we never had this before. We don't know what bracha to make on this. We don't know what exactly to make of this. So Rav Shechter discusses, can geula happen in a natural way with ups and downs in a very natural form? And finally, he discusses the last thing, which we're almost certainly not going to get to, is establishing a yantif. Can you establish a yantif on getting back Eretz Yisrael if you hold that it's aschalta de geula? He just makes passing reference that if you can establish yantif, does not necessarily mean you can say halal. Those are two different shailas, but he doesn't deal with the halal shaila, he deals with the yantif shaila. So let's start at the beginning. There is a Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph that tells us that Chizkiyo HaMelech did six things, three of which the rabbis approved of and three of which the rabbis did not approve of. One of the things that they did not approve of is that he cut down the doors of the Heichal and he gave them as a gift to the Melech Ashur because he figured he needed to make such a gesture in order to have peace with the Melech Ashur. And Rashi says that this was a terrible mistake because he should have had Bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After all, the Navi said the Galnosi al Yerazos Loshia, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect this city, and therefore you don't need to go doing these things and ripping apart pieces from the Beis HaMikdash as if it's like the old Yankee Stadium and you're selling it off on eBay to the Melech Ashur just to make peace. That's not the way that you're supposed to do things like this. He should have had Bitachon. That's why they were upset at him. So what that Rashi implies though is, had a Navi not promised him that everything was going to be okay, then that would be appropriate. In order to save yourself from pikuach nefesh situations, it would be appropriate to even rip apart the mikdash to save a single Jewish life. Pikuach nefesh is docha kol atarukula, except for avodah zarah gilui reich shvichas damim. So therefore, it sounds that it should be appropriate. So Rav Shechter says that's what a lot of people will tell you, that Rav Shach and many others that will say that it's not worth a single Jewish life to hold on to land. Where's land amongst the mitzvos of avodah zarah gilui reich shvichas damim? Why is that worth a single Jewish life? Why is that pikuach nefesh? After all, granted there's an isser of losichanim, you're not allowed to give land in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim, but that's a los asay. And pikuach nefesh is docha every los asay in the Torah. So therefore, we don't have any haftacha from a Navi. So, and to the contrary, there's always terrorist attacks and there are always people, rachman al-tzlan, people dying in Eretz Yisrael trying to defend our country. So maybe it's best to just give it all away. So Rav Shechter tries to say why he believes that taina is totally incorrect. Why is it totally incorrect? There is a Minchas Chinuch, mitzvah Tav Chav Dalet, where the Minchas Chinuch tells us that pikuach nefesh is docha all the mitzvahs in the Torah and all the surim in the Torah, but that's true, but that's only shalo b'shas milchama. When you're dealing with a time of war, you don't say, oh, well, if we're going to lose even one person, then it's not worth the whole war. Because then there would be no such thing as a Milchemes Mitzvah. There would be no such thing as war in the first place. When the Sanhedrin decides, Milchemes Rishus means you get Rishus from the Urim Batum, from the Sanhedrin. So when they go, we'll learn Sanhedrin next year. When they go and try to get Rishus to go out for a Milchemes Rishus, what's the Cheshbon? Is the Cheshbon, oh, well, if we might lose Safik Pikuach Nefesh, we might lose a single life, then we can't fight this war? That's absurd. Then there wouldn't be any war. So Pikuach Nefesh, the rules change. when you're dealing with the Shas Mulchana. And he says, this is Pashut, this is dealt with by many Achronim. The Netziv, the Brisker Rav, Nachlas Yitzchak, Tshuvas Tvar Yeshua, Mitzvah Mordechai, many Achronim suggest the same idea. That obviously, B'Shas Melchama, you can't apply the normal rules of Pikuach Nefesh. So is Medinas Yisrael B'Melchama right now? So Rav Shechter suggests that Medinas Yisrael has been B'Shas Melchama since its very inception. Since 1948, there's never been a moment where it hasn't been B'Shas Melchama. Many of you are familiar in the late 1970s, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, Zichrono Livracha, the Rashiv of Chaim Berlin, was on a plane that was hijacked by terrorists, and it was landed in Jordan, and for a while, a good while, he was held captive, and there was a major discussion in the Torah community at the time, if the government will allow for it, if they can get away with it, should they bribe the terrorists to let Rav Huttner go? Meaning if he had some wealthy Talmidim, Chaim Berlin, who were willing to come up with millions and millions of dollars, can they offer that money in order to let Rav Huttner go? So they were all discussing based on the Mishnah and Gittin. The Mishnah and Gittin says that you're only allowed to be podeshvuyim ad kedei demayim. You're only allowed to pay what they're worth. You're not allowed to pay more than they're worth. You're not allowed to pay an exorbitant sum, because if you pay an exorbitant sum of money for a captive, it's only going to encourage them to do more terrorism and to capture more people. So Tosus over there says, but when you have someone who's held captive, who's a muflag b'chachma, who's exceptionally brilliant, who's an exceptionally important Talmud Chacham, then you're allowed to pay more than he's worth. You're allowed to pay more than his value on the slave market, or however we determine what he would be worth. Then you're allowed to pay whatever sum of money you want to pay in order to let him go. So some were saying, that's Paskim Shulchan Aruch, Reishon and Beis, and Yerodeh, Sif Dalid, that you're allowed to pay most Yosem Kedei Shavim. Maybe Rav Huttner has a din of someone who's Muflag B'Chachma, so we should pay this enormous sum of money to get him out. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky apparently at the time said that the Cheshbon is totally false, because he says that whole din of how much to pay for a captive is only B'Shas Shalom, it's not B'Shas Melchama. B'Shas Melchama, you're never allowed to do anything to help the other side. So if you're in the middle of fighting a war and you're going to pay the other side money, that you're not allowed to do, no matter what, no matter who the person is that you're talking about holding captive. I don't know what kind of relationship Rav Huttner and Rav Yaakov had after that, but I mean, thank God Rav Huttner got out okay. You know, I don't know if he was like, I'm the guy that said we shouldn't redeem you. But anyway, that was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's psa. That I think the relationship was fine. That was a joke. But that was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's psa. So what do you mean, Shas Melchama? Who was fighting a war at the time? There was no war going on. Rav Yaakov said that since the establishment of the State of Israel, our Arab neighbors have never come to grips and peace with the fact that there is a State of Israel. They still call for it to be wiped off the map. They still don't put it in the textbooks in their schools. They still openly, as long as they're speaking in Arabic, openly say that they want Israel wiped off the map. That's not shalom. They just are regrouping. Every moment that seems like shalom is them regrouping to attack again. So there hasn't been a single Shas Shalom. So mainly the whole issue of Pikuach Nefesh is off the table. You don't say, I'm going to lose one life and therefore it's not worth holding on to that, because it's all a Shas Melchama. We don't follow rules of normal Pikuach Nefesh when it's a Shas Melchama. We have to, not only that, we have a Chiyuv to kill if we have to. That to the point that if it takes collateral damage, which it always does in war, and that sometimes people who are innocent are going to be killed, in order to protect Eretz Yisrael, in order to save our homeland, that's what we have to do. In general, there are two types of war in halacha. There's what we call Melchamas Mitzvah, and there's what we call Melchamas Rishus. Melchamas Rishus means to get Rishus from the Beis Din HaGadol, that we go out from Melchama. Now, Umos, we do recognize, the halacha does recognize the rights of the Umos HaOlam to fight wars also. What kinds of wars are those? Well, they don't have a Beis Din HaGadol. So whatever war we view as a just war amongst the Umos HaOlam, by definition, would have to fit into the category of Melchamas Mitzvah, not Melchamas Rishus. They don't ask Rishus from a Beis Din HaGadol. So says Rav Shechter, based on Chassam Sofer, let's say, he wrote this, it was a little dated, he wrote this in the 80s, he said, let's say the Russians were to surround Washington and say, we don't want to kill anybody, we just want you to hand over Washington, D.C. We just want to take over your capital city, we don't want to kill anybody. And if you don't, then we're going to start a Melchama, then we're going to start fighting a war. Is the United States of America entitled to defend Washington, D.C.? To keep their land, to fight over that land, and possibly lose lives in that battle? Dover Pashut? That yes, of course they are. Why? Any defense of a national homeland is considered to be a Milchemes Mitzvah. By definition, it's a Milchemes Mitzvah. So Rav Shechter suggests it should be no different when it comes to Medinas Yisrael defending its own national homeland. By definition, it's a Milchemes Mitzvah. It's not something that's going to require Netilas Rishos. However, Neturi Karta comes with the following Taina. There is a Gemara in Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to Abba Sikra Bar Achte, his nephew, Ad Emasai Avdisu Hachi, how long are you going to refuse to make peace? V'katlisu Leile Alma B'kafna, and you're costing so much, there's so much damage, so many lives that are being cost. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ultimately leaves Yerushalayim deceitfully, sneaks out, and he makes shalom. And they give him he gives over the Medina, the Beis Hamikdash, everything in order to make shalom. So it says in the Torah Karta, what do you see from that Gemara? That in order to make shalom, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was correct, in order to avoid loss of life, you have to give everything up. The country, the city, the Beis Hamikdash. You give it all up. That's the taina of the Neturi Karta. Says Rav Shechter, not a good taina. Why is it not a good taina? They had no chance of winning that war. There was no question about how that war was going to end. That war was going to end in the Jewish people losing. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, look, if you're going to lose anyway, cut your losses. Instead of losing lives over an elongated period of time, cut your losses, give over the land, and that way it will save lives. But if you actually have a chance of winning the war, there's a chance of Nitzachon b'Milchama. So that's what the Sanhedrin decides. It's really Sanhedrin's job. Can we win or can we not win? If it's a winnable war, you have a chiyuv to fight the winnable war. If it's not a winnable war, so then you give over the land and you don't fight the war. The question then becomes, how do you define a winnable war? What's called winning a war? Did the United States win Vietnam? What's called winning? The cost was tremendous. Officially, on the scorecard, we won, I guess. But the cost is tremendous. What's called winning a war? How do you define winning? So he suggests, sometimes you win a battle and lose the war. Sometimes the opposite. So if we were to determine that continuing to fight our Arab neighbors and stand up for our homeland is a losing proposition, and that the only way to not lose is by just giving up pieces of our homeland, then enochinami, the halacha would be that we would have to give up pieces of Eretz Yisrael. But who decides what's called winning, what's not called winning? So Rav Shechter suggests that the way to be masbir this is based on a yesod that a lot of achronim suggest, that milchama, when it comes to milchama, like we said before, we don't look at pikuach nefesh of yechidim as pikuach nefesh, but we still do look at pikuach nefesh in the sense of pikuach nefesh of the country, pikuach nefesh of the whole. I mean, what is that? We don't look at the pikuach nefesh of a yachid. We have such pride in our nation that our patriotism should cost to be on someone else's cheshbon, should cost someone else's life. Well, why is that? Why does that make sense? So he suggests the yesod davar is that every ummah, every nation has a homeland. That homeland is its lifeblood. The Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael are what we call Klal Yisrael, according to the Gemara in the beginning of Horios. And therefore, in regards to Aparel and Davar Shel Tzibur, how do you measure Rov HaKal? Who's called Klal Yisrael? Only those Jews that are in Eretz Yisrael. Rambam, Pirush HaMishnayos, and Becharus, Daf Chavtes, all the mitzvahs that are knowing by Eretz Yisrael are because Jewish people came from Eretz Yisrael. It all emanates from Eretz Yisrael. It's not based on our DNA. It's based on the fact that we were Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Our lifeblood is our homeland. And therefore, when a nation's homeland is being threatened, it's considered pikuach nefesh of the nation. It's almost like you view corporations as a separate entity than the people who make up the corporation. You view a nation as a separate entity. You view a nation as one large body. It's not pikuach nefesh, are we going to lose a soldier? We will, unfortunately, sometimes in wars, that's what happens. But are we going to lose our very nationhood? Are we going to lose our very homeland? That's the pikuach nefesh. So how we magdir this? So just like when you have a person who is very ill sometimes has very difficult choices to face. The doctor will say, look, you can go through this treatment. It will take months. It will be painful. Your life is going to be miserable. And you have a 40% chance of surviving if you go through this treatment. Or you can live out your last few months in peace and, you know, relative comfort. Spend time with your family. Zero chance of survival long term, but at least the last few months on this earth will be peaceful. Who makes the call? Who makes the decision? Because that's the way these... It's not like, oh, we're going to win, we're going to lose. Winning, like I said before, with Vietnam, who won? Winning, losing is very difficult to define exactly. Who gets to make that call if this is a battle worth fighting? If this is a real victory? So the halacha by chola is that the chola decides. Not his children, not his family, the chola decides. And I think I pointed out to you, if the Rosh Hashanah points out that if the chola is unable to decide because he's not conscious or whatever, the family is not supposed to decide what they want. They're supposed to decide what would he want. Because it's his decision. It's nobody else's decision. And therefore, when making a national decision of this nature, it's up to the tzibur. It's up to Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael to decide, is this a war that's winnable? By their own definition of winning. Is the price that we're going to pay worth it? How does the tzibur decide? So it used to be we had this great thing called the Sanhedrin, and they represented the tzibur. So they were able to make the decision on behalf of the tzibur. In the absence of Sanhedrin, perhaps the Gadol B'Torah, the Gadol B'Yisrael, is able to make that decision. If only we had someone who was universally recognized as the Gadol B'Yisrael to make that decision. In the absence of that, we have to go with Rov. We have to go with Rov Klal Yisrael. But he says it's important to realize this is not an issue of psak halacha, where a Talmud Chacham has more of a right to paskin a halacha than someone who's not a Talmud Chacham. Where someone up, Rav Yashiv says one way, so he has a much bigger vote than I do, because he knows how to learn. He's a really big Talmud Chacham. No, this isn't about paskin a halacha. Mashal ma'adav doma, you have two cholim that have the same exact illness in two beds right next to each other in the hospital. The doctor tells them at the same time, look, these are your choices. The 4 months of excruciatingly painful treatment, 40% chance of survival, versus no treatment, comfort, and spending time with your family, zero chance of survival. And one of those cholim is a Talmud Chacham Muflag, he's a Gadol Adar, and the other one is a regular Stam Balabas. So the Gadol Adar says, I want to fight to survive. I want to go through the treatment. Does that mean the Stam Balabas has to make the same decision? Absolutely not. It's not a psak halacha. He has the right to determine what's called winning for him. So in regards to determining this for the tzibur, for Klal Yisrael, it's not that a Talmud Chacham has more of a right than anybody else. Everyone makes the decision together. And Soloveitchik pointed out that in these types of issues, sometimes the metzius, we don't know the metzius. We don't know what we're capable of, what we're not. It's only the generals in the army, the intelligence officers, the people who actually have first-hand knowledge of the information that can actually know the metzius. So with Rove of the Seaboard, not that they think it's not worth fighting, I don't care so much, I'll give it up. That's like a chola saying, I know you can cure me, but I don't really need to be cured. My life's not so great anyway. No, that doesn't count as a vote. If someone in Eretz Yisrael says, it's not worth fighting, why bother? You know, Eretz Yisrael doesn't really mean that much to me anyway. That doesn't count as a vote. What counts as a vote? If you say, no, I understand the issue. I understand that life is valuable, and I understand the risks. And here's what I determine to be a victory or a loss. Very, very difficult to figure that out. But that's essentially how we would figure out land for peace. Now, what about Geula? Is Medinas Yisrael right now called Geula? I may go a little over time, so if people need to leave, again, like last week or last time, if you leave and there's no one left, I'll stop. The Gemara Megillah tells us milchama can be aschalta de Geula. Now we use this term aschalta de Geula. I remember when I was in Keren B'Yavne, people used to like to ask Rav Stav and all the Rebbeim who weren't from the religious Zionist camp. They would ask them pointed religious Zionist questions to try to get them to say something against the yeshiva's policy. That was like our sport. That's what we did for fun. So people would ask Rav Stav, is Medinas Yisrael reishis michas gulasenu? So he would say, I'll tell you what happened when we asked that in Kol Torah, we asked that to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, L'mai naf kamina. Doesn't make a difference. What difference does it make? You have to be a frum Jew. If it is Reish Smichus Kol HaSein, or if it's not Reish Smichus Kol HaSein, you have to serve Hashem and learn Torah. So what difference does it make? L'mai naf kamina. So the boy said to Rav Shlomo Zalman, what if you're Makadish and Isha al Manas, the Medina Sisol is Reish Smichus Kol HaSein? Is it Kiddush and Tovsin or not? Okay, cute. Rav Shechter says there is a nafkamina, though there are two nafkaminas. Number one nafkamina is whether you're allowed to be koveya yantif. He's going to prove, based on the nesivus, which we're not going to get to probably, but he's going to prove that you're allowed to be koveya yantif for anything that is lichora reishis smichas kula seidu. That at least seems to possibly be reishis smichas kula seidu. The nesivus says that's what Purim was. When they defeated Haman, they viewed that as lahach rezaro shalamalek, beginning of Geula, and that's why they were Kaveh Purim. Turned out they were wrong. It wasn't the beginning of Geula, but Purim is still Purim. You're allowed to be Kaveh Yanta for anything that's L'chora Reshus Michas Geula Seinim. Second Nafkamina is, unbelievable, Minchas Elazar writes, it's Aser to Davin that wars that are Reshus Michas Geula Seinim should end. You're not allowed to Davin that the war should end if that war is part of Aschalta de Geula. Is a necessary war. We want the Geula process to take its course. We want the war to be victory, not to just end. So the question is, what is Geula? If you're going to define Reishis Smichas Geula Seinu, we need to define what is Geula. So for that, the Ramban, in his Hakdamah to Sefer Shmos, points out that Chazal referred to Sefer Shmos as the Sefer HaGeula. Frek, the Ramban, we don't get into Eretz Yisrael at the end of Shmos. Why is that the Sefer HaGeula? Yoshua should be the Sefer of Geula. That's when we get into Eretz Yisrael. Not Shemos. So says Ramban, no, it's Sefer Geula because at the very end of Sefer Shemos we read about the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the Binyan HaMishkan. And having a Mishkan is the definition of Geula. So Rav Shechter says, let's take the next logical step. If Geula means having a Mishkan / Mikdash, Aschalta de Geula must mean beginning the process that ends with having a Mikdash or a Mishkan. What is the process? It's an Afna Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chafam Beis. Gimel mitzvos nitzavu yisol b'knisasam la'aretz. When we go into Eretz Yisrael, we have three mitzvos. Lahamid la'amelech, to establish a king. Lahach rezaro shel amalek, to wipe out amalek. And finally, livnos em beis ha'bechira, to build a beis ha'mikdash. The Gemara outlines a three-step process, says it needs to be keseder hazeh. Needs to be in that exact order. Once you begin that process, you now have what we can rightfully call Reishis Tzmichas Geula Seinu. The beginning of the process is step one, Laham Idlahem Melech, to establish a Jewish government in the state of Israel. That is the beginning of Geula. Now the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvos writes, in his Hasagas to the Sefer HaMitzvos, in Mitzvos HaSei Dalid, Shenitztavinu L'Reshis HaAretz Asher Nasan HaKel Yisal Al Avoseinu, V'lo nazva biyadzu l'seinu min ha'umos. We have a mitzvah, two mitzvahs of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. One mitzvah to actually go and live there, but another mitzvah not to leave it in Gentile hands. To take over Eretz Yisrael, to take control of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam leaves out this mitzvah from the Sefer HaMitzvos. Megillas Esther, commentary on the Rambam, not written by a guy named Esther, but written by someone whose mother's name was Esther, and as he was going to print, his mother died, so he called the Sefer Megillas Esther. Writes that the Rambam held that it's not a mitzvah, it's no igladoros, and that's why the Rambam didn't count it. Avnei Nezer points out that that can't be correct, because the Rambam counts Trumos and Maestros, Chala, also not knowing Bizman Azeh. So he thinks Megillas Esther is incorrect. So why does the Rambam leave it out, says Rav Shechter? The Rambam leaves it out because it's part of the mitzvah of Lahamid Lahem Melech. And the Rambam counts the mitzvah of Hamadas Melech. The Rambam does count the mitzvah of establishing a king in Eretz Yisrael. Melech doesn't mean a melech per se. It means a malchus, it means a government. How do we know this? Rav Shechter says three rayos that melech means a government and not a king. Number one, Ramban al Torah in Parshas Korach says that if Klal Yisrael would have been ready for it, the Beis HaMikdash would have been built in the days of one of the Shoftim. There was no Melech in the days of the Shoftim. There was Jewish control of Eretz Yisrael. But if in order to build the Beis HaMikdash, you need to first Lahamid Lahem Melech, then Lahach Rezaro Shel HaMalek, and then to build the Beis HaMikdash, how could the Beis HaMikdash have been rebuilt during the days of the Shoftim? Elamai, what do you see? Melech doesn't mean Melech, it means Malchus. it means a government. Another Raya Yerushalmi in Meister Sheni says, Beis HaMikdash Asli Banus Kodem L'Malchus Beis David. We're going to have the Beis HaMikdash before the Malchus Beis David returns. Well, I thought you need a Melech in order to have the Beis HaMikdash. How can we have the Beis HaMikdash before the Malchus Beis David returns? Elamai, you need a Jewish government before the Beis HaMikdash. Malchus Beis David may only come later. Third Raya, Ramban in the Asagas Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Sof Minyan Hashmatos Salavin, he says, Mitzvah al ha-melech, ala shofet, umisha ha'am b'rishuso, lo tziyam latzava b'mechemes rishuso mitzvah. Who gets to fight the melchemes ha-rishuso, melchemes ha-mitzvah? The melech, the shofet, or whoever's running the country, prime minister. Again, malchus, not a melech. Bottom line is, the goal is, and I'll stop because I know it's late. The goal is that we should have a Beis HaMikdash. The first step in that goal is Lahamed Lehem Melech. The Gemara at the end of Megillah tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avram Avinu, B'me'eda ki arishat irashenu. How do I know that I will inherit, my children will inherit Eretz Yisrael? HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially tells him it's B'zchus HaKarbanos, it's B'zchus of being able to have a Beis HaMikdash. The goal is the Beis HaMikdash. The first step is Lahamed Lehem Melech. Rav Shechter spends a lot of time and throughout the rest of the piece explaining what a Malik is, because that's the second step, Lach Rezar Shal Malik. He also spends a lot of time explaining how we know that just because, granted, when we have the Beis HaMikdash, the step, the process is going to involve Melech, Amalek, Beis HaMikdash, but how do I know that the process won't be aborted now and then restart again in 300 years from now? Okay, we got Lahamed Melech. Does it ever say anywhere that once we establish a Jewish government that we're never going to lose it again? And that the process, well, maybe we'll lose all of Eretz Yisrael, and then 300 years from now, we'll get it back, and that's when it's all going to happen. So he goes to, if you read it, he proves, tries to prove that point as well, that we have a guarantee from the Nevi'im that once we get it back under a Jewish government, not a rebellion, like Bar Kokhba rebellion, which wasn't a legitimate government, but under the control of a legitimate government that's recognized by the United Nations, it's recognized by the world as a Medina, then we will never lose it again. This process cannot be aborted. There will be ups and downs in the process. We can lose parts of it. But as a whole, we won't lose the entire Medina. And therefore, he says, it can rightfully be called Reishis Tzmichas Gula Seinu.